Welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa. I'm your host. And in today's episode, I'm speaking with reproductive acupuncturist Kirsten Karchmer. Kirsten and I spoke about root causes of cycle issues, period myths, and personalized approaches to fertility solutions. If you like the show, please subscribe and give us a rating or share the episode with someone who might find it helpful. Thank you so much. And as always, if you want help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we are your go-to coaches. Just hit the contact link in the show notes. Now onto my conversation with Kirsten. Kirsten Karchmer, welcome to the show.
Gosh, I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
It's my absolute pleasure. This topic of reproductive health is really so important for literally anybody, whether you're male, female, whether you have a cycle, don't have a cycle, whether you're premenopausal, postmenopausal, going through the menopause transition. I am 100% certain that you're going to walk away from this episode with a lot of learning in your mind, and more importantly, also practical things that you can take into your everyday life to be more fertile or understand your cycle or your spouse's cycle a little bit better. So yes, welcome to the show, and I would love to hear from you. What is the number one thing you're excited for the listener to learn today?
I think that the most important thing, if anybody is working on any part of their health, right, that the one thing that we miss that I'm always so surprised when I go to the doctor that they never ask me is, what's your energy like?
Oh,
You know?
interesting. Yes.
And I was a reproductive acupuncturist for 25 years. And in Chinese medicine, we're always assessing their qi. You know, that means energy, basically. But you don't need acupuncture or anything. Like, you can check your energy by just being like, how tired am I? On a 1 to 10, and you have to exclude these two things. On a 1 to 10, if I don't have any caffeine or exercise for 2 whole days, what would my average energy be? Of course, sometimes it fluctuates throughout the day. And the reason that that is so important is that it really tells us how everything else is functioning. Like, if you think you're really healthy, but you feel tired all the time, that there's your whatever you're doing, you might be over exercising, producing a lot of adrenaline, which makes you feel really healthy. There's all kinds of things. So it's the starting place. And we interviewed 16,000 women last year and asked them that question. And they said only 8% reported having energy 8 or above without caffeine or exercise for 2 days. And 50% said 5 or below.
Wow,
50% of
that is
16,000 women. It's huge. And wherever we are going in our health, if we don't, what we need to be able to do as a foundational function is to make, conserve, and restore energy. And if we can't do that, everything else is supplements, everything else is going to be a waste of money, because you're going to keep draining the tank and needing more supplements and needing more whatever and more red light therapy and, you know. And so this is a real focus place.
Wow, yeah, I love that. If we can give people some tools throughout the conversation today for increasing their energy, I know we have done a wonder, or you more importantly, have done an incredible job. So I'm excited to hear about those strategies. And yeah, let's chat about what are some of the root causes of cycle issues or fertility issues or just in general reproductive health issues.
So if you think about it, if you think about the, because people are like, well, the underlying cause of my infertility is I have PCOS or I have endometriosis or, you know, I don't ovulate. That's not the underlying cause. We have infertility. And then below that, we have PCOS, endometriosis, you know, those kind of things. And then below that is what I'm looking for, right? So what are those deep underlying factors that are contributing to the PCOS or to the endometriosis? Because if we address those, we actually don't even have to worry about the PCOS, because if we fix these, that fixes the PCOS. We stop symptom change chasing. And so looking at, we identified in my clinical work 50 subclinical factors, and some of them are quite surprising, like women who exercise to exhaustion 4 or more times per week are 70% less likely to get pregnant.
That is huge.
Less likely to get pregnant. Women who have less than 4 days of bleeding have 50% less likelihood of getting pregnant. If you have a cycle that extends past cycle day 35, you have a 50% less likelihood of getting pregnant and a much lower likelihood of staying pregnant. So it's all these things, fatigue, certain temperature patterns, the color, quality, consistency, and volume of your menstrual blood. Your temperatures before and after ovulation, your average temperatures before and after ovulation, And so what we identified was that basically everything that happens from day one of your period until you're done bleeding is incredibly diagnostic. We don't need tests. Like, our work in my work, in my job is to find out how do we make fertility and families finally affordable. And so people say, well, do you use functional medicine? And I was like, no, because functional medicine immediately makes it not affordable. And more importantly, almost all the tests that a functional medicine doctor might do, and there is a place for functional medicine, but I don't need to run an expensive test to check your adrenals. If your energy is a 2 out of 10, you have adrenal failure. You know what I mean? We can follow the symptoms and make a pretty decent approximation. And because we're not giving one treatment to one thing, we're not saying this is to fix your adrenal fatigue. We're like, well, how are you living in which that's producing adrenal fatigue? And let's build a personalized program for you to start repairing the adrenals in addition to all the other things that it finds, if that makes sense.
That makes 100% sense. And I really, really like that approach because it's not just putting a band-aid on, or it's not just, because I mean, even if you give someone hormones, if you give someone certain medications in order to make getting pregnant easier, you're not addressing the underlying issues. Even if they successfully have a pregnancy, the pregnancy is probably not going to be as healthy as if they were also addressing the underlying issues. And post-pregnancy, they continue to live a suboptimal life in low energy and with all these other things. And if they want to get,
And with a newborn.
yeah, that's right, exactly. So even lower in energy, most likely. Wow. Yeah. No. So I really think that's a wonderful approach, and I know that many of the ways that you tackle those issues is through nutrition. Of course, here being on the Nutrition and Life podcast, we'd love to hear some of those practical strategies.
So again, for us, we're always about personalization, which you too. It's like there isn't a diet for everyone. There isn't even a diet for everyone who can't get pregnant. There isn't a diet for everybody who can't stay pregnant, right? We have to do the work one way, whether we use AI to do it or to have a human who can sit with you and interview you and determine, like, one reason a person might struggle to get pregnant is because they have less than 4 days of bleeding. It tells us there just isn't enough lining to support implantation. But more importantly, the production of blood is incredibly important for staying pregnant and making humans. You have to make a placenta, right? You have to be able to double your blood volume. It's through your blood that you nourish your baby. And so if the blood is either thin or there's not enough of it, it's reflecting that when the time comes for you to make hella more blood, you're not going to be up for it. So just giving iron, if we think nutritionally, like let's just give iron. But if you just give iron and you don't figure out why there's no iron, if that's the actual problem, then you're just using it's again, it's still a band-aid, even though you don't think like giving, you're like the underlying cause is the blood deficiency and we're going to give iron and this is a root cause treatment. It isn't because we don't know why, where the blood's going. So we can use nutrition then. First, we have to make sure, like, we have to figure out, like, well, if there's only 1 day of bleeding, why? If they only have 1 day of bleeding, they're often tired, right? Because that's below, you have energy production, blood production, hormone production. And so then with the energy, you might find, oh, this person has a lot of gas and bloating. They're a vegan, but they think that's really healthy and blah, blah, blah. And you're like, now we're getting to the root cause. What she's eating, how she's digesting. So maybe even if she wants to just even stay a vegan, then we have to identify what are the nutrition gaps in her vegan diet and how do we complement that? And so, we make custom menu plans for each week of the menstrual cycle. Like you get an AI chef in the app. You get a nutritionist and a chef. So the nutritionist is looking through after you do your AI consultation, she figures out all the underlying issues and then starts programming how can we achieve some of the repair on these underlying issues with food.
Very
And
cool.
so, I always say start with a Mediterranean diet, but we have people using our app like all over the world. And you can tell your chef, I live in India and I don't want to eat a Mediterranean diet, first of all, because I can't buy the things. There, I need Indian food that are appropriate for what I need. And so then it can generate those menus. And the only other thing is, seed cycling. People always ask me about seed cycling, which I don't recommend for the same reason. It's just seeds and nuts are really good for most people. And if you eat them, you will feel better because you're getting more protein, fiber, and fat, and they're really nutritious. But because each person has different needs for their fertility issues, seed cycling doesn't make any sense to me because if something is strong enough to make a therapeutic impact, including food, then it is strong enough to hurt you if you don't need it, right? And so we don't want to do that. It's just like a lot of doctors are now prescribing, this isn't food, but are prescribing vitamin, I mean, a baby aspirin if people aren't getting pregnant and to thin the blood a little bit, which would be fine if you had endometriosis, really heavy, really clotty bleeding. But if you don't, if you have normal bleeding or you have less than 4 days of bleeding, that baby aspirin is actually going to make the blood thinner and make the situation worse. And I keep bringing up examples so people see, like, oh, if it works for this, but you don't have this, this hurts you. So instead of following every stupid thing you see on TikTok, oh, this is a baby in a bottle. Well, like, well, because one person got pregnant, that thing probably addressed their specific underlying issue. And that's why they got pregnant from something weird like Geritol.
Yeah, obviously I am enamored with the idea of individualized approaches, and with this one in particular, because you're even taking into account where someone lives. And I mean, to your point, if I have learned something over my several years of coaching, it is absolutely pointless to recommend someone in India, oh, hey, why don't you just cut out the rice and maybe you can have potatoes instead, or
And
likewise.
some tabbouleh.
Yeah, that's right. And they're like, what are you talking about? It's not even available here, yet alone I don't like it and I don't want to eat it, right? So we do have
And my
to,
family won't eat it, you
that's
know.
it, exactly. We have to meet the person where they're at. And I mean, yeah, I really think it's great that you're shedding light on the information that, hey, seed cycling is not for everybody. It might be something that could be, beneficial to you, but I don't know that yet. I need to look at your specific situation, maybe even some blood work if we have it. If not, then, looking a little bit deeper. And of course, seed cycling doesn't help at all if that person is still exercising 7 times a week, 2 hours every day, and really high intensity work and so on. So yeah, I think that's a wonderful approach. And I mean, what are some other, I guess, myths, I guess, around the cycle or period in general, maybe nutrition around that as well, but just overall period myths, I guess.
So I think that the biggest thing that I like to talk about is that's really misleading for women, and they're spending a lot of time and money and being very stressed and anxious, are all period and fertility trackers and monitors. I hate them. I hate them so much. I don't hate the people behind them, but here's why. What they don't do is they don't tell women, like, if you have a long cycle, you have an egg quality issue. Right, the follicle is optimally mature between cycle day 14 and 17, and if you're ovulating on, cycle day 30 or any day past cycle day 20, the follicle is starting to break down because that's what it does if you don't use it. And there isn't a single fertility monitor or tracker that has that transparency that says, truthfully, we shouldn't be trying to catch a 40-day cycle. They're like, have sex now, have sex now, but they're not saying, although you're probably going to have a miscarriage. Right? Because now the egg quality, and what are the underlying issues that are causing the cycle to be so long? Usually insulin resistance, which is really hard on pregnancy, right? Gestational diabetes, or a host of other problems that we want to re your body is saying, I'm not ready. And if you just use a monitor, like, fuck it, I'm going to just find ovulation wherever it is and have sex on ovulation day. First of all, it's stressful. The monitors give too much information that people don't understand. They don't give any instruction on how to repair it. So I usually get like between 10 and 100 DMs a day, people sending me screenshots from fertility monitors. What does this mean and what do I do about it? And that's what made me start getting so they're like, this is freaking me out. What does it mean if my PGD is 47? I don't know. And who should I call? What, all of this. And that's really stressful. And so, like in the Conceivable app, all that happens is it's very straightforward. As part of your virtual care team, you get a data scientist. So we have a wearable that measures non-invasive glucose monitor. It's really cool. It's just a ring and you don't have to check your blood sugar, checks your temperature, monitors your heart rate variability. And then what's happening is, and then you're entering information, you're telling her, you're talking to the therapist, you're getting your tongue examined, like all of this. And then what happens is you just can go and talk to the data scientist, you hit the analyze button, and she'll look at everything. And she'll be like, all right, Lisa, so here's what I see. Your energy was a four when you started, and it's come up to a five, and I'm really happy about that. But I still want to see why we're not making progress. So when I look at your sleep, I still see you're only getting 6 hours of sleep, and we cannot repair your energy with 6 hours of sleep. So let's talk about that. Are you having a harder time falling asleep or staying asleep? Oh, I can't fall asleep. Now she has to go to the root cause of why she can't fall asleep. First is the obvious one. Tell me about your caffeine consumption. Oh, I actually have 4 cups of coffee a day. Oh, okay. When do you drink those? Are they all in the morning? No, 2 in the morning and 2 at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Okay. So the solution, the treatment is let's try to start slowly switching to decaf in the afternoon and see if that changes it. So the app makes a hypothesis. It finds the root cause. And then, I mean, she's drinking coffee. The root cause of that is the fatigue.
Right.
So we have, but we have, yeah. So we have to figure out ways to give her, to boost her energy, doing breath work, doing, heart rate variability. I mean, a vagus nerve training to give her a little bit more energy. Usually when we start getting better quality and the right food into people, their energy starts to pick up. And so you see, it's a very integrative system.
I love it. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, great that it's addressing things like sleep as well. And sometimes the hard thing about exactly that cycle that you're talking about is breaking the cycle, because you're like, how am I supposed to function if I suddenly cut out caffeine? But it is necessary, often going through a little bit of a withdrawal period, just so that later on you're giving your body the chance to actually have a more balanced energy system throughout the day. So yeah, and just shedding light on that whole period tracker things. I think that's really important for people to notice also, because sometimes we think then we need to squeeze ourselves into that quote unquote normal window. And just like, not every vagina looks the same, and there is no quote unquote normal when it comes to that either. There is no normal when it comes to this is a period, this how is how it has to look like for everybody. And it has to be exactly this strong, it has to be exactly the same every single month. There are obvious fluctuations. So I think that's an important information. Yeah, are there some other like period or cycle myths that tend to be around?
Well, one myth, and it's perpetuated by fertility monitors, is that you should have sex on the day of ovulation. But the data actually don't support that. And this is why, if you just, if I kind of disagree a little bit with your point about like everybody's different and there's a wide variety. I do agree there's some variation, and what I want to avoid is perfectionism, right? I want to avoid people feeling pressure to be perfect. But we did identify an optimal cycle for fertility based on like when people get here, they get pregnant. And we found that about 80% of our patients could get into that optimal range in 4 to 5 months.
Wow.
And so we know if we keep, and so the reason why I'm just disagreeing with you, not to be rude, a rude
No,
answer show,
please, honestly.
the reason to push back on it is because I think it's like saying like, because doctors will be like, oh, you have this cycle or that cycle or whatever, and that's fine. You only have 2 days of bleeding, that's fine. And when we say like it can look a lot of different ways, then people stop looking. How
Right. I get
close are they to optimal? And some people need to get really close to optimal. And some people, like in our pilot, we showed that doing this process increased the likelihood of conception by 150 up to 260%, right? Ridiculously high outcomes. And but what we need to remember is that it's literally by just going back to the score. We found that people only had to get a score of 60 to get into that window. So they didn't have to get 100% of the way. They only had to get 60% of the way. But we don't know which of the levers are the ones that are important for you.
Right.
I'm working with someone who everything, she's like 95%, but she got electrocuted one time. And I think it messed up her HPO access. And so, it's like she's pretty darn as good as you can get, but I can't seem to sort out how to get her HPO access to work a little better after the electrocution. So, and she's probably still going to get pregnant just fine anyways, but that last little bit we just can't seem to get to. And I suspect it, she got electrocuted from her house. She went in the shower and there was faulty wiring and she touched the thing in the shower and got electrocuted.
Oh my goodness. I'm
I've
glad
never heard of
there
such
was
an.
no quote unquote other permanent damage, but I mean, that's bad enough.
I know, or that she could have fallen and hit her head and,
Right.
drown or whatever. So it was a good situation. So I think, some things like Energy is, you have to have high energy. Like, because if it's the embryonic cells have 10 times more mitochondria than any other cell in the body. Why? Because when the sperm and the egg come together, they have to start multiplying, dividing like crazy. That uses a lot of fuel. So if mom is tired, right, or dad is tired, right, we produce an inferior embryo that doesn't have the resources to develop. And we see much higher instances, like when that happens, like those people, the LH will surge, take a long tire, longer tight. They won't get to the 98s to produce enough progesterone and so on. So I think that, going back to your question, the myth is that you need to have sex right by ovulation, when the research is really clear, it's much more effective to have sex 3 days before ovulation, 1 day before ovulation, 1 day after ovulation, and 3 days after ovulation. And if you plan it like that, it's basically cycle day 11 and then go every other day if you have a 28 to 30 day cycle. And then you don't have to use a monitor. You don't have to spend money. You just have sex every other day. And you will spread sperm across 10 days. You cannot miss the fertile window.
Well,
Like, if you're doing that and you have a, 28 to 32 day cycle, you are not getting pregnant because of timing. At least we can check that one off.
No, I think that's a good strategy, and also a strategy that's not like you need to look at your clock and like right now, honey, let's go sort of thing. which
Yeah,
puts even more
so
pressure
boring.
on it. Yeah, that too. And also I want to thank you for pushing back, because obviously I want to learn from the experts, and I always am open to different opinions in any case. So thank you for that, truly. And yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense how you're explaining it as well. And
Oh, good.
I'm wondering, just in general, let's say someone is sleeping, quote unquote, well, 7+ hours, decent depth, and so on. Someone is exercising a moderate amount, eating the right amount, whatever that means for them, mostly high quality foods and so on, but still not getting pregnant. What tend to be the most common sort of themes around where it's like this is still very prevalent, a very prevalent cause of not falling pregnant?
So half of the time it's the men now.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So male factor, when I first started in practice in 2000, male factor accounted for about 20%, and now it accounts for a solid 50%.
Wow.
And so if you look pretty good and are not getting pregnant, I would suggest testing your husband's sperm. And even, it's like a lot of times, like, doctors will say, well, you've gotten pregnant once. Like, maybe you had a miscarriage, so we're not going to check the sperm. But I think that's bad, because just because one good sperm got in, right? It wasn't good because the person didn't stay successful. Or if they did, all kinds of, like, maybe you had a baby 4 years ago and then your husband started smoking pot or dipping or just smoking, right? Which is so bad for sperm. It is horrible. Or started a job where he got exposed to some chemicals. You just don't even know. And so doctors will really push back on this. They're like, no, maybe you had four miscarriages and you want to get a semen analysis. Your doctor will be like, no, it doesn't. But that's actually not true. The morphology of the sperm, that's the DNA of the sperm, right? Are they correctly formed from a genetic point of view? If there's problems with the morphology, then there's going to be problems staying pregnant, because you're getting bum sperm. They don't have proper heads. They have two tails. They have broken heads, broken tails, multiples, all these kinds of things. And so we have to be really careful there.
Wow, that is so interesting, and unfortunately quite shocking as well, to be honest. Would you, it's probably hard to say, but would you trace that back to a decline in testosterone, overall, or what is that attributed to?
So there are many, I mean, there's a lot of research going on this, but actually the biggest, looks like the biggest impact right now is microplastics.
Wow.
So BPAs and phthalates. So in your home, if you're trying to optimize your health, your cycle, your fertility, any cleaning products are very bad for men's sperm. Anything that's scented, if it's synthetic, so like, I just put fresh flowers in my house because I like to have smell. You can use a diffuser and, aromatherapy, but just make sure that you're buying certified organic essential oils, and they are expensive. But a little goes such a long way. Like, if you translate it to like 40 candles, but like Young Life, Young Living, or Young Life, I can't remember the name, but doTERRA, these are very, very reputable essential oil places. Candles, plug-ins, Febreze, plastic, anything in your kitchen, Tupperware. Even a new study came up that showed with like a correlation to the amount of times you eat fast food with the concentration of BPAs, because the wrapper, the paper that your hamburger comes in, is it's got a coating on it, which is plastic. And when they put your Big Mac in there and then they wrap it and then it sits in the bag, and then you go home and then you eat it, it has it in very high cons, and I actually like takeout a lot, even though it's very bad for you. Super high concentration, so it's hidden in a lot of places, and it is particularly bad for men's sperm, because both BPAs and phthalates, this is, imagine this is the scrotum. I'm Italian, so I like to gesticulate, and then there's like a little sac, not the ball sac, but like the sac that holds the testicle, and that's sort of like the blood-brain barrier, but for the sperm. And BPAs and phthalates can cross that and enter the DNA of the sperm, which means then it changes the DNA of your offspring. So we're showing reproductive outcomes compromised in the offsprings of male offsprings, particularly a lot less bad for the female offsprings.
Wow.
So it's really serious. And then things like I'm on vacation, you know, for this call. So I'm in my room on my bed and I have my computer sitting on my lap. Well, if my ovaries were external to my body, right, that's a lot of EMFs sitting right, and a lot of people sit with their computers on their lap or have their phones in their pocket right next to their testicles. I saw a study that showed that skinny jeans were actually a factor because it causes constriction, you know. But what's really, really, really important that most people don't know, I think that men should have a semen analysis like every 2 years. And they don't like to do it. You got to masturbate, you know, it's very uncomfortable for everybody. There are tests you can do at home now. The only one I like is Legacy, because it has to be a full test. Is that having abnormal semen parameters is predictive of earlier onset prostate cancer, more severe prostate cancer, diabetes, and heart disease. Your sperm is like your canary in the coal mine.
Wow.
And so it's a reflection of how you're living. Men will, like, women will say, like, probably not my husband. He's really healthy. I was like, tell me about what he does. Oh, well, he goes to the gym at 4 o'clock in the morning and he works out for 2 hours and he drinks a smoothie and then he works. And I was like, does he drink coffee? Yeah, he drinks a lot of coffee and, you know, like Red Bull or whatever, you know. And it's like, and then what about after work? And she's like, you know, he might have one beer, which is not a problem, you know. And how much sleep does he get? And, you know, it's like, you know, not too much sleep and whatever. And I was like, well, let's look at his sperm. And then the sperm is in the toilet, right? Because the
Right.
guy's really exhausted. He's not eating. And especially what's interesting is if the motility, that's how fast the sperm swim. If the motility is low, the man is tired. Because if he's tired, he's going to make tired sperm.
So again, a bit of a cycle there. Wow, that's so
Yeah.
interesting. And yeah,
Yeah.
a few pointers, like when it comes to the burger wrapper, I did not know that, but I knew any kind of receipt that you receive nowadays, fortunately, it's a little bit less, but because people are becoming more aware of paper and blah, blah, blah. But any kind of receipt, all of that also very, very high in endocrine mimicking chemicals. So would certainly make sure to stay away from that. If you're working as a cashier, I'm sorry for you. But
Well, just wear gloves. If
yeah,
you
that's
know, like,
right.
that's what I tell people. Just get gloves to wear and wash your hands frequently. Except, where are you located, Lisa? I can't remember.
I'm actually in South America, so yeah, might not apply to me.
Yeah, in the US, we have this store, Trader Joe's, which used to be a neighborhood store, and it still feels like a neighborhood store. They are the one of the few grocery stores in the US that they use BPA-free receipts
Oh, amazing. I did not know
to
that. Okay.
protect their, yeah, to protect their, and it's a nationwide chain. So to protect their employees first, which I like, they say that, like, first we do it to protect our employees. Second, we do it and protect our customers.
That's amazing. I learned something new. Well, I learned many
I
new
try to give them a shout out.
things.
And for your listeners, actually, the receipts, you know, the stuff that's on the street is so concentrated, it is 1,000 times worse than a plastic water bottle. A thousand times worse.
That I think that really blew my mind. I mean, I didn't know it was exactly that number, but I've always known it's very, very, very high. So people do not take your receipt if someone gives it to you. And I mean, all these other things also are helpful for women in regards to eliminating or minimizing plastic exposure, parabens, and pesticides and so on. So I like that you highlighted that. And also to your point of like thinking you're living a healthy way, often we're like, oh, I go to the sauna and, you know, I do this and that, and sauna or heat exposure is also can, to my knowledge anyway, also be very detrimental for sperm quality. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And even like a lot of people are doing sort of hot yoga. And, you know, to me, hot yoga is a therapy. It's like a colonic. You wouldn't do, I mean, I don't do colonics, but I understand sort of the premise, right? Of just like a little detox, sort of. But you wouldn't do that every day.
That's right.
And hot yoga, originally, Ashtanga yoga was like something you would do after you had been fasting for like a few days, just a few days. But over and over, you really like people think, well, I just drink water because I sweat so much. I'm like, sweat is not only water. There are a lot of other components to sweat. And in Chinese medicine, they say over 35 preserve the fluids. Like, it just gets harder and harder to, you know, we just get older and holding on to the fluid in the cell becomes harder and harder.
Yeah, and I think what I'm hearing you say, like as a bigger picture here as well, is just stress, any kind of stress, whether that's stress from lack of sleep, stress from running around at work all day, stress from high intensity training or even yoga. I mean, heat exposure is a
Is
stressor
this true?
on the body. Too little eating, so like dieting, 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 stress from poor food quality, all of these things that we often don't recognize as stressors, and then those in accumulation, they seem to be really having a negative effect on fertility for both men and women. Is that sort of correct?
I think that that is really well said. I have not thought about it in that way, is that all of those, that's a really good way to explain it to people. Like all of these are like insults or stresses to the body. You know, I would add using a fertility monitor. Because they're so upset, you know, they're looking for some good news, a dopamine hit, and then they don't understand it or it seems bad. And then they start doctor Googling and they're like, oh my God, but they can't get answers because there aren't answers because we actually don't know how to adjust PGD or whatever. And so all of those things, you know, I think getting gaslighted by your doctor when you're on a fertility journey, like just keep trying. You've had four miscarriages, it's bad luck. It's not bad luck. I promise you, that's another myth. It's just like if you're not staying pregnant or you're not getting pregnant, it's bad luck. Like there's always, and there's no unexplained infertility. I've never seen a true case of unexplained infertility where like I've met with them and are like, wow, you look kind of perfect and the husband's sperm are good too. Never, not a single time.
Well, thank you so
And
much for
that's
the work that you're doing, because honestly, it's so important just giving people hope as well. And I mean, I have never used a fertility tracker, so to speak, but I kind of feel similar in a similar way about sleep trackers, because I have had poor sleep in the past due to shift work as well, and still sometimes something I struggle with because of overthinking and all these things, you know, that you go through. So for a
yeah.
year, I decided to wear an Oura ring, and at first I was like, oh, okay, this is informative, and you know, you do get some good data. And then, exactly as you're mentioning, I found myself getting more and more agitated just looking at it, like, oh. I didn't sleep enough. That means I can't like actually train today because it's telling me I have a really poor score, but actually I'm feeling great. So what do I listen to? And then at some point I was just like, this is too much. I feel like I'm not checking in with myself anymore and how I'm feeling. I'm relying too much on this data and it is actually stressing me out.
Exactly. And I mean, I think that like the step that the app would take or what Aura should do is that then it's like to try to help the user figure out to reverse engineer on those nights when the sleep is poor, what are the factors, and then provide her with tools and resources to cope. Like if you're like, you know, if it asked you like, huh, was there anything bothering you last night? Yeah, I was really worried about going on this podcast with Kirsten. No, I'm just kidding, you know. And it said, well, let's talk about it, you know, and spend
That
5 minutes just
would
processing it,
be different, of course,
you know, because then you're really getting a lot of value, you
right.
know. You're, that data becomes something actionable,
That's
and it
it.
becomes something that actually feels like a positive thing versus a negative thing.
It's empowering. That's it, as opposed to putting you in sort of like a victim, non-understanding sort of position. So yeah, absolutely. And I mean, all the strategies that you have for just just sustainable well-being as well. Like, aside from, I want to get pregnant right now, but let's say someone is having those symptoms of like low energy or irregular cycles, etc. Maybe in the menopause transition or w at whatever stage it might be. So if someone listening to this, who is not wanting to get pregnant is feeling that way, what can they act on in terms of as a sustainable strategy?
So, there's a couple of things. Like we want to start with those three things. Like, how's your energy? So I always just say, like, the first thing is to think about. And so if your energy is low, right, without caffeine or exercise, first of all, a lot of people are over-exercising when they're not even doing that much. If your energy is low and you exercise, there isn't energy to get through the workout. So you are absolutely going to go to the adrenal glands. And then you're going to get cortisol. And right there, you have worked against your fertility and your weight loss journey and your fitness journey. And so one of the things I really like we have a wearable that can track HRV and stuff. There's an app called WellTory that you can use that's $10 a month. It's not free, but you can just track your HRV by putting your finger on here, which I like because you can do it anytime you want. We will have in the next probably 3 months, we're building this face scan technology. So light will pass, I'm like, and we'll be able to read your blood pressure, body composition, HRV, VO2 max, not blood sugar, which is what that's what our ring does is blood sugar. And so it'll be able to do it that way. But really getting acquainted with your heart rate variability is probably the most important first step because, like, just for your listeners, heart rate variability is different than heart rate. Heart rate is how many beats per minute. Heart rate variability is if we watched it for a minute or two, how much, if it's like my resting heart rate is 60, but if you watch it over 2 minutes, not 2 months, be boring. It would be like 60, 58, 49, 40, 41, 30, 60, 60, 28, but it'd be all over the place. And that looks like it's worse. But actually, the more fluidity between beats, it tells us that your body is able to navigate its environment with ease and not get stuck. And so a lot of people will say, my energy is good. But then when I see everything, my energy is good and I'm not stressed. That's what they'll tell me. And then I see their heart rate variability is like 20. And then I start, digging in a little bit deeper. And it's like, well, I am really stressed, but I just push through. Or I am really tired, but I just have so much to do. I don't even think about it. Or I just use a lot of caffeine or, whatever. And so it's a way to check your work because a lot of us, especially women, we basically are only allowed to be one way, and that's like this. Because if we're mad, we're a bitch. And if we're sad or upset, we're a baby. And so women are professionals at putting on a happy face and being like, everything's just fine. And that is killing us. That is killing us. We have got to find a way to get expressed and to feel okay with people thinking that we're a baby or a bitch or being a bitch, even if we need to. Whatever it is that to give ourselves our full expression, because it's not really safe in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and even to give ourselves the permission to feel all those emotions, because quite often I think we're the ones who are limiting us and like, oh, what are they gonna think? What are like, maybe people are not even judging us, but we think we need to put on that brave face of perfectionism. And again, like I've always put my hands up first as a recovering perfectionist or type A person, where you're like, no, I want to, maintain that same image of blah blah blah. But when actually other people around us would probably support us more than we think, if we're like, I am actually having a horrible day today. Like, I don't know why, but somehow, particularly like from women that are going through the menopause transition, I hear so often like, I don't know what's going on with me. I just saw a puppy and I felt like crying. You're like, yeah, like cry first, just stand there and cry. Who cares? Like, do it. But I know it's not as easy as that when you probably have to go to work 3 minutes
Or
later.
you're at work,
Yeah, or that. But yeah, I think like just sometimes giving ourselves that permission of like, you don't need to be perfect. On the contrary, people will probably love you even more if you're being your authentic, true self and not putting on a brave face all the time, because you too deserve to like fully express and live your emotions. So I really, really think it's wonderful how you're addressing the mindset and the emotional aspect and the mental health as well. And I honestly, just from this brief conversation with you, it seems like such an incredible affordable but all-inclusive holistic tool, your app and all the technology that you're using so wonderfully, that I'm a big fan of your work already.
Well, that makes me really happy. And when you were speaking about like not having like to be your real sense self, I also like super perfectionistic, hopefully somewhat recovered. And a therapist told me, she said, "Let me tell you a secret." And she said, "You, your authentic self, perfect and imperfect, is 1,000 times more interesting than anyone you can pretend to be."
Wow,
She says, "A pretense is very boring." She goes, "It can be sexy and glittery on the outside, but there's no meat to it." And she's like, "If you can trust and just keep reminding yourself every time you try to be like on Instagram or be whatever different than what you are," she's like, "just remember that you are much, much millions of times your real self is so beautiful and compelling. You don't need to adjust it to fit into anybody else's standards." And that was very healing for me to hear that, to just try to, and it wasn't even that hard to accept because I'm like, that is probably true. I don't like fake food. I like real food. And even if it's ugly or,
I really felt that. Thank you for sharing that. I hope the listeners also felt that and resonate that and with that and take that to heart. I think even that is a wonderful message. So, Kirsten, thank you so much for your time. I'm going to make sure to put all your handles, all your links in the show notes so people can and should go and check out your content and your app and all the wonderful work that you're doing. So, truly, from the bottom of my heart, thank you.
Thank you. And for all the ladies who are ending their journey of menstruation, in the next probably 6 months, conceivable will be able to take care of their menopause needs as well. Probably take 6 or 9 months. This is not, of course, to replace any humans. It is really your companion. Not everyone can afford a human person to help them. So we want to make sure to have everybody have at least a baseline. But do remember that, like everything that we're doing at Conceivable, it has no intention of replacing any humans. It's trying to help people who can't afford it have access to it and to be a badass companion to whatever humans are helping you on your journey. And so I really appreciate being here. Thank you so much, Lisa.
And that is an additional great news. And yes, thank you so much. I hope, I know the listeners will take a lot away from this episode.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Kirsten. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow. And remember, if you want help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we'd love to guide you. One more thing before you go. If you're looking for premium supplements, our partner Fat Muscle Project has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more, and feel free to use our code NCL for your chance to win a $250 gift card every month. Thank you for listening.